Hi there. I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM, Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. Today's episode focuses on the June 22nd Region of Waterloo Council meeting. This was a rather full agenda as it was the last council meeting prior to the summer break. Topics discussed at this meeting included the Climate Action Plan, several housing projects, and an update regarding the region's childcare plan since closing the 5 regionally owned centers last year. We'll start with the Transform Waterloo Region Climate Action Plan. Over the last couple of weeks, several organizations such as Climate Action Waterloo Region and Faith Climate Justice have been delegating at the council meetings of all the local municipalities and townships regarding the Transform WR plan, which is a region-wide climate action mitigation plan aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. 50 by 30 Waterloo Region, as their name suggests, had an added call for an interim reduction of 50% by 2030, as opposed to the 30% reduction by 2030 proposed by the region. The region's media release states that this action plan will guide the community's energy transition off of fossil fuels and advance the region's strategic focus areas of sustainable transportation, environment and climate action, healthy, safe, and inclusive communities, and a thriving economy. The Transform WR strategy recommends 6 transformative changes to reach by 2050. The plan envisions that most trips are taken using active transportation with the support of a robust public transit system. Remaining personal and commercial vehicles are zero emissions vehicles. Businesses and homes no longer use fossil fuels for space heating and cooling and water heating. Waterloo Region uses less, wastes less, and no longer disposes organic matter in landfills. Waterloo Region has a thriving local food system built on local farming and food processing that feeds much of our community. And lastly, Waterloo Region has leveraged greenhouse gas reductions to increase equity, prosperity, and resiliency for all. There were around a dozen delegates who spoke to this issue, with all of them in favor of the region adopting the Transform WR plan. Councillor Jeff Lorentz wanted each of the delegates to answer the question, how will we pay for this?
Generically, I think each speaker, I would like for them to just basically answer a couple of questions. Who do you think is going to pay for this initiative over these many years? And there is only one taxpayer, so what do you think this will cost the region of Waterloo taxpayers as we move forward on this issue? I mean, there were some questions raised earlier about financing, and I think people coming forward with all these great ideas, they have to understand that there's only a finite amount of money, especially at the provincial and federal government. I know many people that haven't been working for the last 18 months. So just being realistic, and I think it adds another dimension to the discussion that everybody would love to have everything all the time. But I think it's important that people need to think on the costs, especially the ones that between the provincial, federal, and regional taxpayers, what it would cost.
Chair Tom Galloway said he would allow delegates to decide whether they wanted to answer that question. One delegate from 50 by 30 Waterloo Region, Meg Rattan, did have a response to Councillor Lorentz's question.
With respect to Councillor Lorentz, we know that the cost of inaction is far greater than the cost of action at this point. And trying to continually refocus it on the economics really elides the fact that there will be enormous suffering, human and non-human, even here in Waterloo Region. While I do believe we should cost things, there are plenty of formats where we can see what the cost is and how the sooner that we act, the more money we'll save and the more lives we'll save.
After delegations were finished, Council discussed the plan and any possible amendments they would like to see. Councillor for Kitchener, Michael Harris, has concerns about how robust the engagement has been on this to date and what the specific costs of implementing these actions might be.
You know, I didn't see any, you know, perhaps shared comments from our business community. I know we've got own utilities here in our region. I haven't seen a staff report yet on their input on achieving this potentially. The wording here is pretty firm. Although it may be aspirational in nature, it definitely you know, it feels like I'm committing an awful lot without knowing an awful lot. And, you know, I'm not comfortable with that.
Kitchener Mayor Barry Verbanovic cautions against watering these recommendations down, as now is the time for bold action.
The one thing I would be really cautious about, though, is only approving this in principle. I think this is a body of work that has been boldly prepared by many community partners. It's had extensive community consultation. You know, this community has exhibited continually for many decades leadership, going back to when the Blue Box started in the city of Kitchener many decades ago. I think it's incumbent on us to have that same kind of definitive leadership as we go into this next step.
Councillor for Waterloo, Sean Strickland, says he is supportive of the direction of this plan, but has concerns around the costs and wants to know more specifics in that regard, and that council is not simply agreeing to a blank check to pay for this work.
We certainly need to do whatever we can to combat climate change. There's no doubt about that. And I would concur with the historical leadership that we've shown on this file and the leadership we continue to show other communities across Canada. But my concern is, leadership at what cost, and leadership but not a blank check. And, you know, just last week, we received our first budget, had our first budget meeting, and the indication was a potential 6% tax increase. And we want to focus on service delivery and do whatever we can to provide the best service to our communities at a reasonable rate and a reasonable tax increase. And so, you know, when I look at this report, this has got far-reaching implications, which we all are generally in support of. But if you look at, you know, the recommendation, just go B, subsection 2, developing a detailed corporate climate change plan to transition the region off of fossil fuels as a corporation and as a community service provider. That's millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. And there's no denying that we need to spend money on this. But when I look at the report and I look at the financial implications, well, you know, with respect to staff, like, we've all been there before. We support something like this, and then a recommendation comes back for 2022. I don't know how much it's going to be. Is it going to be $1 million? Is it going to be $5 million? Is it going to be $10 million? And then we feel that we have an obligation to support that recommendation because we supported this resolution here today. I just want a better window of how much staff are proposing we spend, and we spend in 2022 and beyond.
Councillor Harris again raises concerns about what he perceives as a lack of engagement, specifically within the business community.
I did also want to draw people's attention again to those six transformative changes. I mean, I read the community engagement summary report, and I know there were, you know, some extensive consultations. However, I didn't see a lot of detailed feedback from the business community. I don't think that there was, you know, an extensive consultation. I don't see anywhere in there mentioned, you know, a roundtable consisting of the local chamber of commerces in both Cambridge or Greater Kitchener Waterloo. You know, that concerns me, because if you look at those transformative changes, you know, item 3, by 2050, businesses and homes are no longer use fossil fuels for space heating and cooling and water heating. It's important to draw your attention to the fact the language in item 1 and to achieve the 6 transformative changes outlined in the strategy. I mean, yes, that's bold, but it's very definitive and comes not only at a cost, forget about the costs associated. There are measures by which the regional government, maybe a legal aspect here of us basically, you know, dictating to these businesses and homes that they're not going to be on fossil fuels by 2050. I mean, we don't even know if that's even achievable.
Staff respond by outlining some of the engagement that was done in general and also with members of the business community specifically. In light of some of the concerns raised regarding costs by a few councillors, the motion now says that implementation of these climate action plans will be subject to financial analysis and budgetary approval. Chair Tom Galloway had some thoughts about costs associated with climate action, which differed from some of the concerns I mentioned earlier.
I think, you know, we do have to be concerned, of course, with cost. I mean, obviously, there is a budget, and there's only so much that the taxpayer can provide for. And, of course, we have to look to senior levels of government to provide for much of this as well. But the you know, when we do our analysis on the cost of some of these initiatives, I think staff should also provide for the cost of inaction. How much bigger are we going to have to make the storm ponds? How much more flood protection are we going to have to provide for in the Grand River Valley, so to speak, and many other things that are going to be very expensive, and indeed are already being very expensive to deal with some of the consequences of climate change.
The main motion passed unanimously with some adjustments to the language, the main change being amended language suggested by Councillor Harris that changed the motion from to achieve the 6 transformative changes and became to further consult on the 6 transformative changes. An interim goal of reducing emissions in the region by 50% by 2030 was put forth by Councillor Elizabeth Clark. That passed with all in favor except for Councillor Harris. There were a variety of housing projects and initiatives on the agenda as well. However, most of them passed with little discussion. Councillor for Waterloo, Jim Erb, who also heads up the region's Housing and Homelessness Committee, did share a few thoughts about these housing proposals.
And you know, with the early initiatives of staff in drafting the 2021 budget, and if council would not have made the unprecedented financial commitments it did for affordable housing in the 21 budget, much of this housing would not be happening. For 2021, we had approximately 2.6 million in a combination of provincial and federal funding. And we only would have been able to build the first units of Spruce Lawn in St. Jacobs. So 80% of the units we're hopefully approving today are being funded by the region. And what to me just confirms that we, while we're always grateful for the money that comes from the provincial and the federal government, we need to continue to work at creating a long-term strategy of sustainable funding that's controlled by the region. And if we want to move forward on solving the affordable housing, we need to establish that that long-term funding that we can be guaranteed from. So however, rather than dwelling on the long-term funding, let's celebrate the exciting initiative of these 4 applications and get the shovels into the ground.
Regional Council approved nearly $13 million this year on 4 separate affordable housing projects. These projects will offer affordable rental housing for seniors in Waterloo and St. Jacobs, as well as housing for those struggling with homelessness or mental health issues. These projects will create 124 units of affordable housing and 66 market rent units to be started later this year or early next year. Councillor for Kitchener, Elizabeth Clark, was particularly pleased that some of this funding would offer additional support such as healthcare and mental health services.
The units that are going to Threshold and Indwell are for people who have lived with mental health challenges and who are chronically homeless. And those are populations that we've identified as priorities. So it's just great to see this.
Council directed regional staff to use $10 million earmarked for affordable housing in next year's budget to buy property that could be used to build future affordable housing. Regional staff hope to buy property in strategic locations, such as close to the existing LRT line and the proposed Cambridge LRT route. In order to retain affordable units in the face of soaring rents locally, the region will also increase by 50% the supplements it pays landlords who supply affordable housing. All of the above recommendations regarding housing passed unanimously. There were also 2 updates regarding the region's childcare plan. The first was regarding the parent survey the region had available from March 19th to April 16th. The survey was distributed and promoted primarily through email and social media by the Region of Waterloo, as well as several community partners, including both school boards, licensed childcare operators, and community partners that serve Indigenous, Black, racialized, and other marginalized families. It was also available on the Engage Region of Waterloo online platform. The survey consisted of 47 questions, which asked parents about their experience with and perspective on affordability, access, quality, and equity in the licensed childcare system. According to the staff report, respondent demographics, including race, ethnicity, language, education, income, and status in Canada, were also collected. This will allow for disaggregation of data to understand how and if responses differ for different subpopulations, such as Indigenous, Black, and racialized communities and other vulnerable populations. Over 2,900 parents and caregivers who live in Waterloo Region participated in the survey. The majority of respondents, 68%, reported that both they and their children identified as white. 27% of respondents indicated that they and or their children identify with at least one racial ethnic group other than white, including South Asian at 7%, Black 5%, East Asian 4%, Latin American 4%, Middle Eastern 3%, and 2% of respondents identified as First Nations or Indigenous. Staff noted that the most common barriers to accessing licensed childcare included programs being full, the costs were too high, the program did not offer the hours the family needed, and the program did not offer the location that the family needed.
Parents were asked to report what two things they would change about their experience of using licensed childcare in order to better meet their needs and preferences. And the top response was cost. 47% of parents said that the cost of licensed childcare was unaffordable for their family. And for families earning less than $40,000 a year, 66% reported that licensed childcare was not affordable. Parents' comments mentioned struggling to afford childcare, accruing debt as a result of childcare, and how the cost of childcare impacted their decisions to have more children or return to work. One parent commented, "I think there really is a divide in childcare. The quality of childcare varies through community. Sadly, the less money you make, the less better childcare you can access." Parents also commented that they would like to see more childcare spaces available, especially infant spaces, and spaces in locations such as the townships and downtown core locations. Parents also spoke about long wait lists. Said one parent, "More access to daycare centers. We were on a wait list for over 2 years." Many parents would also like to see improvements to the waitlist and registration process for childcare, including more transparency and information about their place on a waitlist. And finally, parents wanted greater flexibility of days and hours of childcare to accommodate changing schedules or shift work.
The results from the survey will be used to shape the development and implementation of the system plan, including policy details and implementation of new funding strategies. This plan, says the staff report, will act as a roadmap for the next 5 years and guide the creation of a more accessible, affordable, high-quality, equitable, and inclusive early learning and childcare system. By taking a planned and strategic approach in collaboration with community partners, the system plan will ensure that Waterloo Region is a community where all children thrive.
Parents were also asked to respond to various statements related to equity, including whether their family received fair and equal treatment in childcare or early on settings, if they felt their family was supported and welcome to fully participate in programs, whether differences were valued, celebrated, and welcomed in programs, and whether childcare program reflected diversity. Preliminary analysis showed that the majority of respondents feel supported, welcomed, valued, and like they've received fair treatments. But it is important to note that this experience isn't universal. As one parent noted, "I don't know of any BIPOC RECs at my center. As a person of color, it can be challenging when your ethnicity is not visible." And so this is an area where further interpretation of the data will be conducted, and disaggregation of the data is required to better understand the experience of different types of families in the local childcare system.
Children's Services staff continue to develop the system plan, which will be shared with Council this fall. The completed plan will also include a full report with findings from the parent survey. There was no update on the families who currently have children enrolled in the 5 centres that are closing this fall. The above was information only, so there was no motion to vote upon. Staff also updated Council regarding childcare funding, as the closure of those 5 centres last year means that there are some funding options to consider. Staff state that the transition out of direct operation of the 5 Region of Waterloo Children's Centres will result in approximately $4.3 million annually in provincial funding to reinvest in the childcare system locally. This is ongoing funding that must be spent in alignment with provincial funding guidelines on eligible childcare expenses. In 2021, the transition is expected to result in the repurposing of $1.1 million in provincial funding. Staff explain further.
This year, there's approximately $1.1 million available, and it's being invested already in grants provided directly to childcare operators to support their stability while they manage the increased costs related to COVID-19.
Staff also note there is a medium risk that provincial funding amounts or guidelines could change in 2022 or beyond, and that those changes could impact the childcare system locally. The report says that regional staff continues to monitor all funding announcements closely and will communicate relevant updates to council. The proposed funding reinvestment priorities focus most significantly on equity, inclusion, and quality. These are system gaps unlikely to receive high levels of new investment. Staff explain.
When we were evaluating the different options as well for this funding reinvestment, we started with those system gaps, and then we looked at which gaps were most likely to be addressed by other funding. We want to make sure that we're using this opportunity of reinvestment to be as strategic as possible to address gaps that are unlikely to receive focused provincial or federal funding that will therefore help with supporting a balanced, strong, robust childcare system.
Staff explain how they are applying an equity lens to this work as they identify ways to address existing systemic barriers.
An equity lens was used when developing proposed strategies and will also guide the development of our operational details and policies. So the first proposed strategy will strengthen the region's role as system manager through long-term engagement with Indigenous, Black, racialized, and other marginalized families. Engagement in this area will focus on addressing systemic barriers in the childcare system. It will involve much more in-depth engagement that would build upon what's already been done in the system plan.
Additionally, increased access to licensed home childcare programs will be supported through startup grants for new providers. Focus funding will address an identified barrier to enrolling new caregivers who are usually women and often low income and identify as racialized. Staff conclude by outlining next steps in the implementation of this proposed plan.
So to prepare for implementation over the coming months, we will be developing the details for these strategies based on the results of engagement with key stakeholders as done as part of our system plan development. We expect to begin full implementation of strategies in early 2022 when the reinvesting funding is available and after the system plan is released. We're committed to continuously monitoring the childcare system and the effectiveness of our approaches, and will be responsive to adjust our strategies as they're needed.
In response to questions from councillors regarding navigating the system and how some centres end up with long waiting lists while others do not, staff say,
there is a perception or a hypothesis that families who have more resources, both financially and otherwise, tend to understand how to work within the system to access the care that they would prefer for their child. And that translates into centers that parents have learned are higher quality, and they've determined are higher quality, fill more quickly. And so families who may not have the same kinds of information about getting on wait lists early, what to look for in quality childcare, how to work with, within the actual system, will end up in the spaces that perhaps are not as high a demand.
Lastly, there was one more item on the agenda that I was hoping would garner more discussion, and that's the plan for the Charles Street Terminal. Planning for this space is only in the beginning stages, but as Chair Galloway mentions, there is a lot of interest in the site and what will happen to it.
There's a fair bit of interest in this site, as you can see on social media and other places. Everybody has an idea what this property can be used for, so this is going to be an interesting process to And in fact, I suspect this site can be used for multiple purposes. It's a large enough site, and we could probably build in a few different things, but not necessarily, I suspect, everything that people would like to see on it.
However, today's discussion was simply for Council to endorse the proposed guiding principles to collaborate with the City of Kitchener to advance technical work for the site. It's a partnership because the region owns about 88% of the site and Kitchener owns 12% of it. Community engagement regarding possibilities for this location are expected to begin this fall. Of course, there are some people already sharing their ideas online. Many see value in ensuring that affordable housing is at least a part of this project. Reallocate Waterloo Region shared some drawings and plans for an Indigenous community hub for this space. That hub, as outlined in their plans, could include gathering space, housing, a health clinic, a daycare, and more. You can read more about this particular vision for the Charles Street space at reallocatewr.ca. And that concludes this update on the June 22nd Regional Council meeting. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. This program is part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom. You can find out more about that initiative, as well as all of the CKMS programming, at Radio Waterloo. Also, feel free to continue this conversation. You'll always find me on Twitter at M2Bowman. Thanks for listening.